We called the guy we know in Chicago to talk about this economy. Probably ought to mention, I guess, that he's the president of the Chicago Fed. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 7th of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Come next week, we'll get the latest read on inflation, also on retail sales. But there will be nary a peep from any of the dozen or so people in charge of this economy. The Federal Reserve goes into its pre-meeting quiet period day after tomorrow, the 10 days leading up to every meeting where the central bank stays mum for fear of tipping its hand and thus triggering the markets. So we have gotten in just under the wire with Austin Goolsbee. He is the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, also a voting member this year of the Interest Rate Setting Federal Open Market Committee. Austin, it's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for talking to me again, Kai.
Well, I'll talk to you anytime. I want you to situate us in this moment. You have said we are on a golden path to getting inflation taken care of without ruining the job market. What does that mean?
I said it's possible that we could get on the golden path. It's not a guarantee, but the golden path would be to get inflation down a lot without having a serious recession. That would be a triumph. The Fed and other central banks around the world have virtually never been able to do that. But I do think at this moment, we might be able to. Monetary policy is working, and that's certainly what we're trying to shoot for.
All right. So look, if you're saying it's possible to get on the golden path, I have to ask you how much more you need to see, because inflation has come down precipitously. The job market, as you know, is still strong. Some signs of it weakening, which is what you guys want to see. The economy is growing. What more do you want to see?
Yay to all of those. We're getting more supply and demand, more back into balance. But the overall level of inflation is still above where we want it to be. And you would need to see this continue with some persistence to really be feeling like we're making the golden path. We're going to get all the way down it. There's clearly risks. I mean, if you look at China, we could have a government shutdown. There are a whole series of bumps in the road that we will have to navigate. And we have seen inflation start coming down before, and it was a bit of a false dawn, and inflation started to come back. So all of those are things we got to keep an eye on.
There will come a point, though, where you're going to have to declare victory. And I guess I and everybody listening to this and corporate America and people who are borrowing and everybody wants to know what you have to see. And it can't just be we need to see more of this happening, because that leaves us hanging going, what are you even talking about?
Fair enough. I've tried to, as we've gone along here, true to my data dog roots as an economist, let's identify what information is the most informative in that we should see. I think it's the new month's numbers of core inflation, especially goods and especially housing. Mm-hmm. So we want to see progress on those, and we have started to see that. And I think that the expectations in the marketplace about where do they think inflation is going, it's a little bit circular, but it has a major influence on is there anything pulling inflation down. The thing that I would pay a little bit less attention to, I don't think wages and wage growth is that good of an indicator for where inflation is going. So I would pay less attention to that one.
Right. And we talked about that last time. So look, I hate to sandbag you like this, but maybe you've seen it already and you knew this question was coming. But there's a new note out from the Chicago Fed, from the economists in your building. If you want to look it up, it's Chicago Fed letter number 483, September 2023. And I'm just going to quote the relevant line here. And it says, according to the model's forecast, and your researchers and economists have described the model above, but the policy tightening that's already been done is sufficient to bring inflation back near the Fed's target by the middle of 2024 while avoiding a recession. So this is people in your building saying, look, you've done what you need to do, Fed.
They're not just in this building. They're great economists.
Yes.
And I recommend Fed letter 483 and the 482 Chicago Fed letters before that. That is an embodiment of the thing I'm saying. I believe there is a golden path opportunity that is unusual. And if you look at expectations, there's a growing confidence that that we can pull it off. The only thing I want to caution you is that's not a guarantee. It hinges on us remaining attentive to the data. And I do think that one of the lessons that's coming out of this Chicago Fed letter is that we are very rapidly approaching the time when our argument is not going to be about how high should the rates go. It's going to be an argument of how long do we need to keep the rates at this position before we're sure that we're on the path back to the target.
Without asking you to be specific, spitball it for me. I mean, is it a year that they have to stay high? Is it 3 years?
If you look at the, I can't speak for, and I don't speak for anybody else on the FOMC, but the FOMC puts out the statement of economic projections, which is the collective dot plot wisdom of what people think is going to be appropriate. Collectively, our forecast is that rates are going to have to remain up for some relatively extended period, but that the deep question of is there going to be a lot more increase in rates? Increasingly, the data is coming in saying the argument should be more about what's the persistence.
I don't want to get too technical and weedy on this one, but it has been suggested on this program and elsewhere that maybe what you guys ought to do is just change the target rate, since you've had historically a really hard time hitting 2% either on the way up or now on the way down. Why not make it 3 and call it a day?
You know, I'm happy to join any weed party that you want. We'll sit out in the lawn and get as deep as we need to. My basic view has been you can't change your target until you've hit your target. So I just think that making a hypothetical decision of if in 2 years we were in this position, then what would we do? We don't know what the circumstances are. My basic view of the Fed is when they announce cleanup needed, aisle two, they're calling the Fed. The Fed's job is to come out and clean it up. And if it's ketchup or it's salsa or it's like some kind of a chutney, it doesn't matter. The Fed's got to go clean it up. And we said that we had a target of 2%. So we got to get to the target and retain our credibility, in my view. All the discussion about philosophy and could it be 3, could it be 2.2, A, it's a little over-precise for my taste. I don't think that we can narrowly manage in that fine of a tuned dimension. And I just think you got to do your job before you can start talking about you want a different job.
All right, I want to get back up to the risks and the bumps. I got two more questions and then I'll get out of your hair. The first is, we are not going to hear from anybody in the Fed starting day after tomorrow until after the meeting. You enter your quiet period. But there are things that are happening in this economy that are going to bear on your decision. The one I want to talk about is the possibility of a UAW strike. You have pointed out that the Chicago Fed, your district, is the most susceptible to that strike. And I wonder how challenging that would be for you and your fellow members of the FOMC if that happens while you're in your quiet period.
Look, indeed, you're quite right that that matters a lot to the 7th District and potentially matters a lot to the U.S. economy. We saw through COVID that things that happen to automobile prices can have an outsized impact on overall consumer inflation. And we've seen what all the supply chain issues can do to the manufacturing sector. It depends critically, of course, if there's an auto strike, how long does the strike go and how widespread is the strike? But it would definitely be material to our decisions about both sides of our mandate.
Right.
What's going to happen to consumer price inflation and what's going to happen to output unemployment and that side.
Austin Goolsbee, he's the president, the CEO of the Chicago Fed. Austin, thanks a lot for your time.
Guy.
I appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Great talking again.
Attentive listeners will recognize that I said there were two more questions. We put the second one at the bottom of the program. You got to stick around for that. Wall Street today, a whole lot of nothing. Mostly we'll have the details when we do the numbers. That golden path that Austin Goolsbee and I were just talking about. Soft landing, of course, is another way to say that, where inflation gets back to where the Fed wants it to be and the economy doesn't really slow down too much, if at all. That kind of sort of maybe seems to be where things are headed. I think we mentioned this the other day, that Goldman Sachs now says the odds of a recession in the next 12 months are just 15%. That is down from their guess of 35% back in March. And if Goldman's right, then the bond market might be wrong. For well over a year now, we've had what's known as an inverted yield curve, which means the yield, the interest, on 10-year Treasury bonds has been lower than the yield on short-term debt, specifically in this case, two-year Treasuries. And when that happens, historically, inverted yield curves have been a pretty reliable indicator that a recession is nigh. Maybe, though, this time is different. Here's Marketplace's Matt Levin.
In normal times, investors receive a higher interest rate from longer-term government debt, which makes sense. The longer you lock up your money, the more you want an interest. But when investors get a better return from a 3-month loan to Uncle Sam than a 10-year loan, something is off. Olu Sinola is with Fitch Ratings.
Investors think that tomorrow will not be as rosy as today. And there's a high likelihood that rates will come down. So that's typically why you tend to see inversions.
Basically, bond investors are betting a recession is coming, which means the Fed will lower interest rates to juice a recovery.
When you think about the last 10 recessions, 8 of the last 10 were preceded by an inverted yield curve.
But parts of the yield curve started inverting in July of 2022, and the economy is still humming. Menzie Chin at the University of Wisconsin-Madison says it's too early to start calling the bond market a liar.
The lag time between when you get the inversion and when you have the recession is variable. And so, you know, it could be anywhere from 6-8 months to 18 months.
But another possibility is this post-pandemic economy is just built different, says Scott Ladner with Horizon Investments.
We entered this period really from a point of strength. Companies don't have to borrow money. People don't have to borrow money. They're in the best shape that they have been in 40 or 50 years.
Ladner says when he takes a microscope to the yield curve, it's not predicting a recession per se. It's just predicting the Fed trying to get inflation back to normal. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Coming up.
We're just always on our screens.
Can't live with them. Can't live without them. First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials up 57 points today, almost 0.2%, ended at 34,500. The NASDAQ down 123 points, 0.9%, 13,748. The S&P 500 gave back 14 points, about 0.3%. 44 and 51 there. Apple faded 2.9% today after Bloomberg reported that China is planning to restrict use of the company's iPhones at state-owned firms. Not a good thing if you're making a lot of iPhones. Coffee chain Dutch Brothers cooled 4.6% today after the company announced a public offering of $300 million worth of shares in its Class A common stock. Starbucks, perhaps relatedly, lost almost 0.9%. Restaurant Brands International, the owner of the Canadian chain Tim Hortons, steamed up 0.75%. There is some sobering news on the housing front. A new survey from the online realtor Redfin shows that 12% of Gen Z respondents believe they will never own a home. 18% of millennials also think they will never own their own place. Why does that matter? Well, of course, owning a home, surest way to build wealth in this economy. Bond prices were up. Yield on the 10-year T-note down 4.25%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. It used to be controversial to say this, not so much anymore, really. But climate change is an enormous business opportunity. See also today's news from Microsoft. The once-upon-a-time software company announced a $200 million contract today for carbon removal from its operations, one of the biggest such contracts to date. Developing the technology to suck existing carbon out of the air, not just reducing future emissions, is key to avoiding some of the worst outcomes of this warming planet. The technology, though, has proven hard to scale. But as Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports, if they get it right, corporate America could be in for a climate upside.
Showing you care about reducing emissions is kind of a business imperative at this point, says Andy Hoffman, a professor of sustainable enterprise at the University of Michigan.
There are investors who care about this. There are numerous pressures, and you can only drag your feet so long.
In addition to Microsoft's investment, electronic payment platform Stripe, along with Alphabet, Shopify, Meta, and other companies, have chipped into a buyer's consortium called the Frontier Fund, a pot now totaling $1 billion.
Our main goal here is really to be an early catalytic first customer.
The Frontier Fund's Joanna Klitsky says today it made $7 million in advanced carbon removal purchases from 12 startups developing technology to suck CO2 out of the air or use reactions with water or sunlight to capture it.
We don't know yet which will be the solutions that will be able to scale up most effectively in 2030 or 2040 or 2050. We are likely going to need a number of different approaches.
For these big companies, $7 million is a small, safe way to get in on what could be a winning carbon removal strategy. Daniel Korshan is a professor of marketing at Drexel University.
It signals to consumers or to their customers that this is a company that's a leader, that's ahead of the game, that it's innovative.
It could also help lock in lower early buyer rates for carbon removal credits that could eventually become both financially and environmentally valuable. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
The dating app market is, if not saturated, then definitely crowded. There's Hinge, Bumble, Tinder, Coffee Meets Bagel, OkCupid, Facebook Dating. Okay, fine. It's saturated. There are so many options. Just choosing a platform might well be adding to the already challenging act of dating itself. A survey of 1,400 Tinder users not too long ago found nearly half weren't actually interested in finding dates, and about two-thirds were already in a relationship. And singles sure do seem to be over. According to Morgan Stanley, the top dating apps reported slowing revenue growth last year. So if single people aren't on the apps, where are they? Marketplace's Kristen Schwab looks at the business of helping people meet offline.
It's a Tuesday night at a dimly lit bar in Manhattan. Around 30 singles are here. Some nervously sip their drinks. Others more nervously slam them. They came for a speed dating event called We Met IRL, as in we met in real life. One of the organizers kicks things off.
Good? Y'all ready? Come on, I need some enthusiasm, I need some energy. Let's go!
First, there's an icebreaker. Half of the group gets cards with a question. The other half gets matching answers.
So mine was, what's the typical New York breakfast? And I go, who has bacon, egg, and cheese?
Sofia Fernandez is 25, and it's her first time speed dating. She says she's done with the apps.
I'm trying to find a more organic way to kind of meet new people.
When Fernandez says she's done with the apps, she means done, deleted. She says she was going on date after date with people she had very little in common with.
I think people, it's very easy to hide behind a phone. So you can be, it's easier for people to be someone more interesting or someone else.
Say, someone who has a profile photo with very white teeth, thanks to the Facetune app. Or someone who says they're looking for something serious, but really just wants a fling. Across the room, Ariel Ventura, who's 36, says a lot of people on the apps are just messing around. What's he looking for?
Ultimately, I think what most people look for, and that's like their significant other.
All right. Let the date begin. 4 minutes is on the clock. Once the 4 minutes is done, we'll tell you guys to rotate to the next number.
The daters move from table to table, while the event's founder, Maxine Williams, flutters around the bar. She started We Met IRL in 2022 for people like her, who find the apps exhausting.
We're just always on our screens. I log off work and, oh, I want to date someone. Like, get back on your phone and swipe, 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 and hope that you can get from, hey, hey, how's it going, to a date and a relationship. Like, it just seemed impossible.
Dating felt like a part-time job, so Williams actually made it one. She runs a couple of events a month with two employees and charges $25 per person. Speed dating isn't the only old-school method having a renaissance. Matchmakers are also coming back. A company called 3-Day Rule says their client base has grown 60% since 2020, and it's gotten younger. Erica Kaplan is a matchmaker.
These are the people that have been dating online since college. So all of these people coming to us at 27, 28 have been dating online using apps for about a decade already, and they're sick of them.
Matchmaking isn't exactly affordable. 3 months at 3-Day Rule includes a photo shoot and 3 dates and costs $5,900. And the company doesn't share a success rate. But it's a method some people feel they can trust, as trust in the apps deteriorates and as the apps look for more ways to profit off users, introducing subscriptions and tiered services. Stephanie Tong researches social media and relationships at Wayne State.
They function, right, by wanting people to stay single. That's their client base. But once you are not single, you then exit the app.
Tong doesn't know if apps are deliberately giving people mediocre matches to keep them on their platforms. But the bottom line is, in some ways, technology has made dating harder. There are scammers and Photoshop and now ChatGPT.
So one of the things we started to wonder is if all these profiles, if they're AI assisted, they might all start to sound the same.
I mean, it's already generic enough out there in the app world. That, or everyone really does know the best spot in town for tacos and tequila, like their bios claim.
Over here. Hello, how y'all doing?
Speaking of tequila, back at the bar, the speed dating event is coming to a close. A few people are leaving with phone numbers, including Ariel Ventura, the 36-year-old searching for his soulmate. Meanwhile, Sofia Fernandez's evening didn't end as she'd expected.
No, I didn't get any numbers, but it's okay. I got my foot in the water. Oh, I got the bartender's number. So that's good. He was cute.
Hey, she still met someone, off the apps and in real life. In New York, I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, as promised, one more thing. That second question from my interview with Chicago Fed President Austin Goolsbee. Here you go. Our new intern asked in our morning meeting this morning a question that I should have known the answer to, but don't. And then my boss said, well, look, why don't you ask Goolsbee? Because he will know. She wanted to. We had given her the assignment yesterday to go through the Beige Book and pick out choice anecdotes, right? And her question was, when you guys are around that long table in the Eccles Building on Constitution Avenue, or wherever you are now that it's being renovated, talking about interest rates, does anecdotal data from the Beige Book come up? Or are you guys all data, as you know, the data dog, talk about all the time?
No. It definitely comes up. And applause to your intern. We got to get that intern over here at Chicago Fed. You can go back to the transcripts. We're not allowed to talk about anything that was said in the FOMC meetings within the last 5 years. But after 5 years, you can look at the transcripts and you will see many bank presidents at every meeting talk about our contacts are telling us this, the data shows A, but business leaders in that industry don't agree with the data. Mm. They think it's out of date. So any real-time information you could get is extremely valuable.
Sophia Terenzio, by the way, the intern extraordinaire in question. All All right, we're done here, though. Your moment of economic context. A quick follow-up to our story yesterday on the strength of the U.S. dollar. The Chinese yuan hit a 16-year low against the dollar today, in part because the greenback is so strong, yes, but also because Beijing announced this morning its exports fell in August for the fourth month in a row. Not great for an exports-driven economy, right? John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Babawe is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.